You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. Back in 2016, after Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson raised allegations about Fox executive Roger Ailes, the fallout helped further survivors of sexual misconduct speak out against their attackers, sparking a movement that reverberated throughout the industry. Now, with his latest film, Bombshell, director Jay Roach attempts to give light on the truth of the story in the hopes of continuing the ongoing conversation surrounding sexual misconduct in our culture. In an honest and challenging conversation, we welcome back Screenfisher Julie Levac and TO Film Files' Jolie Featherstone to discuss the relationship between power and voice. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. This conversation could just go on its own, so I'm not gonna. I'll come up with one maybe guiding question, and we'll just go from there. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are thrilled that you can join us this week as we talk about Bombshell, the Oscar-nominated new film by Jay Roach and stars Charlize Theron, Margot Robbie, and Nicole Kidman. This week, we are thrilled to have back the dream team, if you will, Jolie Featherstone and Julie Levac. Welcome, ladies.
Back at it again. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, I am so glad that you can both be on so that you can help me in this conversation. Bombshell tells the story of the moment when Gretchen Carlson slaps Fox News founder Roger Ailes with a lawsuit alleging sexual harassment. Her decision led to Fox News correspondent Megyn Kelly coming forward with her own story, as well as multiple other women, inciting a movement that would reverberate around the world. As always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers, but ladies, what did you think of Bombshell?
I enjoyed Bombshell. I actually didn't know really anything about what happened at Fox News and all of the sexual harassment allegations with Gretchen Carlson, Megyn Kelly, etc. So it was very, very interesting for me to get a glimpse at what happened, and obviously it was horrifying. But as a film, I enjoyed it. I wouldn't say it was, you know, best film of the year or my favorite film of the year personally, but I thought it was very interesting. It had a Big Short vibe, you know, with the exposition and breaking the fourth wall and stuff like that. So I thought that was pretty, pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'm with Jules on this one. I enjoyed it. Definitely agree in terms of the Big Short vibes. I also, I would say familiar, using that term very loosely with the situation after doing some research, but I wasn't too up on the details prior to seeing the film. I went into it kind of wondering how this was going to be handled, particularly because of the network involved that we see in the film, Fox News. I personally enjoyed it. I'm with Jules in that I don't necessarily think it was one of the most groundbreaking films that I had seen this year, but I definitely think it was very helpful in bringing these stories to a wider audience and to sort of displaying them in a way that was very digestible and also somewhat bring us a bit closer to the characters outside of kind of the public persona that we are familiar with these women in terms of Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson. My understanding is that Margot Robbie's character is a composite character of many different individuals that work at Fox. So I found it digestible. I found it completely engaging. I was completely engaged the entire way through. I think they handled the subject matter well, and also with respect. And I enjoyed it.
I don't want to alarm you, ladies. I'm a man.
Ew.
Ew, boys. So I'm just gonna say, I recognize the blinders that I have in any discussion about this film. So I'm actually coming to you both looking for help in understanding so much more about the film. I will say that I thought the performances were wonderful. I thought that Charlize Theron especially deserves the accolade she's been getting for this. I do find it a little bit odd that in some ways this film some of the accolades are for the makeup, because that just seems sort of like backwards, but it really is a tremendous job by the makeup department, how they develop people. Roger Ailes especially, I didn't even know that was Lithgow until he spoke.
He's such a chameleon in his career these days. It's unbelievable.
Oh, he's a fabulous actor. But apparently it's the same makeup guy that did, what was that one you liked with Churchill?
He played Churchill in The Crown.
Oh, he did? Oh, I didn't know that.
Was it so it was Gary Oldman who played Churchill in that movie, that In the Darkest Hour.
Darkest Hour, that's it.
Incredible. John Lithgow also played Churchill. In The Crown, I apologize if that's incorrect. Actually, I'm going to look it up now just because I feel like I'm going to get hate mail for that one. The Crown, yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize he'd played Churchill.
Yeah,
okay.
I did not know that.
But I mean, I thought the performances were incredible. I thought I liked The Big Short vibe, but I felt they didn't carry it through.
That's fair.
I think they give up on it about a third of the way through the movie, which actually saddened me, just because I really was enjoying the way they were handling the film, and it seemed like it was going to be sort of a satire like The Big Short was. Mm. And then it sort of drops that.
That's fair. I didn't really think about that, but now that you say that, you're totally right.
You know, maybe I should say, I do think that Jay Roach was the wrong person to direct the film. I don't think it should have been a male, personally, let alone the guy who did Austin Powers.
But do you think that he did it justice as a male?
I think he tried.
To it, as a female, what do you think a female could have brought to the piece? I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I just feel like this is a film that needed the voice of somebody who could speak for the people that were the victims.
And
I felt like Roach, I don't get me wrong, it's not like I thought he did a terrible job, but he's going to be speaking with a certain male voice and lens in the same way that I am. Mm-hmm. And this is a film that I felt like didn't need that.
I'm with you there, Steve. I also was a little bit surprised. Well, not really, but a little bit surprised when they announced the film and I saw who the director was. I think he handled it respectfully, but I do agree that had it been directed by a woman, we certainly would have had a much different perspective on it. I think it would have been handled a bit differently. And I just personally would be really interested to see how a woman would have handled this film. Also, I mean, just looking sort of quickly myself, looking at his filmography, because I knew a few of his films, it seems that he's done a lot of comedies. Just the type of comedy that I've seen him work on in the past seems very different from Bombshell and a few more of his recent kind of films. He did, looks like he made Trumbo, which was an Oscar-nominated film as well. That was a bit more of a, I would say, political film. He is a bit of an odd kind of choice for Bombshell, I thought. He did handle it respectfully. I certainly think so, but I agree. I would have liked to have seen how a female director would have handled it.
Well, like we podcasted on Marriage Story together. And, you know, when it comes to Marriage Story, one of the conversations is about who made the film. And, you know, Noah Baumbach made the film a certain way. And I've heard other people say that his ex-wife, they would like to see a version of the film told by her. And I would like to see that too, because it does shape perspective. And,
definitely.
You know, this, the way that they handle the characters, the way they handle Roger specifically in this film, I think definitely would have been affected you know, and even the way they sort of wrestled with the issue. And I don't know. Like I said, I didn't think he did a terrible job. I'm not saying the movie was bad.
Not at all. And I hear you. It would definitely have been handled differently. And I think, like you said, Roger may have been handled differently. I also think the relationships, particularly between Margot Robbie's character and Kate McKinnon's character, might have been handled a bit differently as well.
That's fair. Yeah, I know. I don't. I've also heard that they sort of seem to let Roger Ailes off a little light on in terms of how he did in the movie and some of the things that he said and did. From what I've heard, you know, it got a lot worse than that. And so, and maybe that was just sheer a ratings discussion. Do you know what I mean? Or maybe it did have something to do with the male voice in the director's chair. I don't know. But in fact, I recall watching, after I saw Bombshell, I watched a YouTube video, and I feel like it was like 20 minutes or half an hour long, and it was Megyn Kelly sitting down with her husband and a few of the other females who worked at Fox News, and they all sat down and watched the movie. Immediately after, sat around and had a little roundtable discussion about what they thought. And it was so kind of fascinating. It was kind of awkward and interesting, actually, to hear what they said. And I think that they said that it was a pretty accurate depiction. There were a few things that obviously they took some artistic direction with, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. They were saying that, and I kind of agree with this in terms of Charlize Theron, like she did a good job, but she was a little bit maybe one-dimensional. But and then in my personal opinion, in terms of Margot Robbie, I know that she's been getting some nominations for her role as Best Supporting Actress in this film. And I don't know. I think she did a great job, and I do love Margot Robbie, but I feel like anybody could have played that role. Am I wrong here?
I was really enjoying her performance when I saw the film. It is kind of an interesting role because it is a apparently, from what I read, it's a composite character, sort of made up, taken parts of different individuals to make up this character. So I imagine that would be, you know, slightly challenging from a writing perspective and certainly perhaps from an acting perspective. I did think that there were certain moments where I was really, really impressed, particularly the one sort of scene where she has her first kind of altercation with Roger Ailes, and just, oh gosh, like her facial expression and her body language, it was just, for me, I found it was striking, and I was actually quite impressed. Also the scene where she calls Kate McKinnon's character and speaks to her on the phone and kind of tells her a bit about what happened and what she's thinking of doing. And I also was quite impressed. Her performance in those moments to me just felt completely realized. Like it was completely fleshed out, and it was very striking to me.
Now that you say that, that's interesting, because I my initial reaction was Margot Robbie's character was more generic in that other, you know, actresses of her ilk could play that role, no problem. But when you do talk about that scene when Roger Ailes is asking her to do inappropriate things, and you're talking about her facial expressions, I get what you're saying, because she does quite clearly portray the fact that she feels uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. She knows it's awkward. She knows it's wrong, but she feels stuck, and she wants to please this man because she wants to advance her career. So I can now see more the depth of what she did. So, yeah.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head in saying that it is a bit of a kind of, I don't want to say generic, but sort of a character. But I think that was more coming from a bit of a writing challenge of taking bits and pieces of different individuals and trying to kind of create fully realized character out of it. But I think for me, the physicality of her performance was what stood out to me. And particularly in those two scenes, just seeing the emotions on her face and the tension in her body language really, really hit home for me.
If my research is right, apparently the scene where she's in Roger's office was done in one take with multiple cameras. And the reason was is that Roach didn't want to have to put her through that multiple times.
Wow,
so
that's good.
Yeah, so they did that scene in just in one shot. And I thought, well, that's actually really good. Like, I like hearing stories like that because it shows that, you know, we know you actually are uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to be uncomfortable, and we're not going to make you continue to be uncomfortable in this moment, but you kind of have to be because it's important to the script. But
yeah, that's nice to hear. And I think it probably helped contribute to the more organic nature of the scene because it was just in one take and it was what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's good just overall to hear, like, from an overarching industry perspective, that filmmakers are taking these things into account more. I've been hearing a bit more lately, I would say in the last 5 to 10 might be a stretch, but certainly in the last 5 years, I've been hearing more stories about filmmakers kind of just being a bit more aware and conscious of what they're asking actors to do and the kind of scenes that they have to do. I mean, it is, you know, part of the industry, there are challenging scenes, but actors, just like any workers, should be entitled to some form of, you know, just protection and consideration on set. And I like to hear that filmmakers are taking that fairly seriously. There was a documentary I saw a few years ago at Hot Docs, and very, very different subject matter, completely unrelated, but it was a documentary on a young teen girl, and she's differently abled, and, you know, they discuss some very intimate parts of her life, and it was the director was a man, and he was like, I'm very conscious of the fact that I'm working with this young girl. And he's like, when we shot in her house, a lot of the scenes are in her room, because that's one of the most accessible areas, I guess, of the house for her, and it's also just her personal space. He said he actually didn't enter her room, and he had, I guess, an assistant director who was a woman, and I guess who had perhaps taken some workshops into working with teens to kind of be in there directing. And also all of the camera crew were women as well, so just to kind of make it a bit more sort of safe, I guess, for the subject of the documentary. And that was the first time I really heard that and thought, wow, that's great. And I think since then I've been hearing more stories like this. I think people are more aware of it, so it's good to hear that.
Yeah, those are stories you like to hear. You know what? Okay, ladies, I'm genuinely asking you this question, okay? This is something about the film that didn't hit me right, and I'm coming to you to ask you about it. I felt the film was missing nuance, and I'll explain what I mean. Like, this is a film that's it's a dramatic representation of what actually happened. So I understand that. But one of the things I felt about the film is it was so black and white. So, for example, the things that Roger is doing are clearly wrong, which strikes me as part of a conversation that we should have been having 2 years ago, probably, well, ironically, about this time when Me Too really changed the world. But now I feel like we're in a place where we need the conversation to discuss more than just, hey, telling a coworker to pull up her skirt is bad. There's a moment in this scene where they show Biden putting his arms on the shoulder. You know, that clip became a big thing, and people were talking about him as being kind of a creep, and I think they joke about him being a creep, and then they move on. But to me, those are the conversations I would like to see in a film like this more. As a male, and I know the film isn't for me, but as a male, my thought was, is the film too obvious in what it is, if that makes any sense? Like, what, like, this is a toxic work environment, and we're seeing the worst case scenario. You know, I don't know whether that even resonates with you or what you think about that. I'm really do want to hear what you think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge question. It's a totally huge question.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that personally, I feel that we need to be sharing these stories, and these stories need to be told, because still to this day, even after, you know, the changes that Me Too has brought on, and we are living in a world that certainly I think is moving towards being more aware and hopefully a bit more equitable. I mean, we're still facing gender inequality. We're still facing racial inequality. There's still a lot of discrimination in the workplace in many aspects. So I think that these stories are still absolutely necessary. Sorry.
Let me just interrupt you here for a minute. I absolutely agree. That's
misreading.
No. That's not what I'm saying in any way, shape, or form. I'm not saying the story shouldn't have been told. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is the way they told it focused only on the obvious bad and inappropriate behavior. I'm not saying you don't tell that story. I'm saying along with it, what I'd like to hear, I'd like to see more conversation as well about, well, what else is inappropriate? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? I agree 100% you got to tell the story. Don't get me wrong. And I agree that this is why I knew I was going to get in trouble in this podcast. That's not what I mean. But I'm just saying, like, I would also like to hear stories in this story. Like, they could have included more conversation in a film like this that could have delved more deeply into what else is uncomfortable and inappropriate, because it's obviously inappropriate of what he's doing, and we need to hear that story. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying in that conversation, you've dropped a no pun intended bombshell on Roger Ailes doing this with multiple women. This was not one misunderstanding. It was an ongoing thing with, you know, two dozen women. But there was no conversation about any other level of workplace environment health, if that's what I'm saying, to go with that.
I think it was kind of difficult with this particular story because it was such a huge problem with so many different people. And, you know, to fit it all into the length of a movie, they had to cut some stuff, I'm sure. Although I will say that the movie was unusually short. I think it was only about an hour and a half. So I think that they could have maybe expanded on some of that sort of stuff. See, but yeah, I don't know. It's I can appreciate that they were focusing more on the more serious stuff. But you want to know more about the passive, everyday little comments or that sort of thing.
Yeah, like in addition.
Microaggressions kind of thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In addition to this, I'm not saying that you take away from what their story is saying, but like, for example, when the two women are talking, when Margot Robbie and Kate McKinnon are speaking with one another, all they're doing is talking about how bad Roger is and how bad O'Reilly is. But there are scenes in the office that where they're just passing with coworkers, where there could have been more, just more opportunity to express what is and isn't appropriate that was happening as well.
Maybe that just goes to show that at the time in that environment, a lot of what was going on was very behind closed doors. And I think to me, it seemed like it was very hush hush. Everybody knew that this stuff was going on, but that's just how it was at Fox News. And you just had to deal with it. I mean, look at Kate McKinnon's character, Jess Carr. Okay. Mm-hmm. She was, you know, an out lesbian in her real life, but at work, she knew that she had to keep that secret. She knew that she had to hide the picture on her desk, for example. She didn't talk about the fact that she was a lesbian, and she was explaining to Kayla, you know, this is Fox News, and this is the type of story that will fly here. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's just the environment that they were in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, I agree in that sense. It certainly would be very interesting to see a bit more, as you mentioned, kind of like the daily microaggressions that take place in the workplace. Yeah. And certainly we do get a hint of that just by the way they show the outfits. You know, they make it very, there's a montage that's extremely pointed about how the women who yes. work there get ready for work with the types of outfits they have to wear, the way they have to kind of consistently present themselves in a very specific way, the makeup they have to wear. I think that we get these little hints of it. It certainly, I think, could have been delved deeper into more from like an interpersonal stance, like other than Roger Ailes. And as you mentioned, we hear about Bill O'Reilly. We don't really see how just kind of the daily interactions happen between employees there. As Jules said, it certainly seems like within Fox News, it was sort of an open secret that there were things going on. There was sexual harassment and potentially sexual assaults based on what people were kind of willing to share. Certainly it seemed like a very closed place where, you know, we just kind of don't talk about this.
Right.
You know, based on the power structure, there's certain people that you just don't, you don't speak against them in a way, not only for fear of your job at Fox, but also, as Jules mentioned, Kate McKinnon's character, for your job within the industry. You know, yeah. she didn't even want to work for Fox, but because she had worked there, she had closed or a lot of doors were closed to her just by nature of her working there, even though she didn't necessarily identify with the office culture and certainly didn't want to be there. At least not permanently. I agree that now that I think about it, I think that the film at times might have kind of didn't quite know if it should have been kind of a personal look into Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson's life. Because I feel, as you mentioned, it started off with kind of this big short vibe and a bit of an expose with about what happens within the walls of Fox News. You know, of course, it then becomes a bit more of this personal story of Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson and to another extent, Margot Robbie. It does kind of veer tone and focus, I think, as you mentioned, I think maybe like a third of the way in. Had it kind of stayed course in terms of being this sort of expose of the sexual assaults and the sexual harassment taking place within Fox News and kind of the structural power imbalances there, I think we would have gotten a much sharper look at what was happening within Fox News and certainly from a more kind of employee-to-employee stance. Yeah, and I actually did think that during one scene in the film when Megyn Kelly goes to the conference and her husband and kids surprise her in her dressing room, it seemed that we dove a bit more into the personal life of those two particular characters as opposed to kind of keeping it sort of within the realm of Fox News and exposing the kind of things that were happening within there. But yeah, maybe I think there were certain points where the movie kind of veered off focus.
I love the scenes with her and her husband. I thought they were wonderful. And I thought they were, and her kids. I thought that was really wonderfully fleshed out. I thought they were great. And that's a good point. My argument is that they, by removing Roger Ailes, it is absolutely, the film absolutely treats him as the ultimate villain, which I'm not defending. What I'm saying is, though, there is a culture as well, which, you know, like, as a man, I always thought growing up, I'm like, I'm trying to be the best man I can be. And then after Me Too, I realized, holy crap, I've probably been doing this without even realizing it. You know, just which has been a complete revelation for me in repentant heart. Like, it truly has been, where I'm asking these questions. And that's where that was my issue, is I thought the film just focused in on Roger and Bill, and it was like, oh, they're gone.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm asking is about the culture itself. Like, one article I read at Vox.com with Alyssa Wilkinson, and she's a wonderful writer, and she points out the fact that the time that this takes place, immediately following it, is a video released of a president-to-be, not naming any names here, where he's talking with somebody about the way that he assaults women because they quote-unquote like it. And they sort of gloss over, well, they start with that with Megan because she was directly involved. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the whole thing, is they just wanted to focus in on this one thing. But that's my question, is that, like, this is still a toxic culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you've put it very eloquently in a way that I could not. but yeah, absolutely. I mean, Fox News certainly has, you know, this would not be the first film to kind of out and criticize the culture and power structures within Fox News. And that was actually something that it was very top of mind for me going into the film, was how we're going to see basically a film about people who were victimized at Fox News,
yes,
but had previously been, you know, I don't want to say that they had, I guess, power at Fox News, because certainly the power structure is not set up that way, but they were public facing, you know, they had dedicated audiences, they were given airtime, you know, seemingly to, I would say, the outside world and to their audiences, they were figures with power and platform at Fox News. But this film does give us insight into the fact that, you know, even these figures that do have airtime and are given a platform, you know, were very much subject to this very, very toxic environment.
I think that Roger actually says at one point, bullying is people with power hitting people with less. You talk about the power dynamic. I will say this, and this was one of the things that I've been wrestling with today, is as we were preparing for this, I think that every man, regardless of the extremity of it, needs to not only do a gut check, but probably, you know, humbly accept the fact that in some way throughout their life, they've done this without thinking or directly thinking or just wrong thinking. Mm-hmm. And we are wrong to do that. We have been wrong to do that. A film like this, I think, really drives that home, at least for me.
I appreciate you saying that. That's very insightful. And also I appreciate the fact that, you know, you do prioritize giving women a platform on the show, especially when it comes to films such as this one, where, you know, it is very important because the individuals being victimized in this case were women. You're absolutely right. And I think the more I think about it, your point, which is absolutely astute, about, you know, them sort of painting Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly as sort of this catch-all villain, it almost does take away from the daily kind of grind and sort of draining toxic culture that employees, particularly employees who are, you know, maybe not straight white men at Fox News,
right,
are subject to. You know, as you said, if you remove Roger Ailes and if you remove Bill O'Reilly, you really don't get a sense of the nuances and also the sort of immovable power structure that's in place that then fosters, you know, harassment and assault, and, you know, the terrible things that were happening there. If you remove those characters, there's really not that much nuance, when in reality, I can bet 100% that there was, you know.
Yeah.
But we don't really get to see that other than, you know, a few kind of hints and nudges here and there, particularly around the women's clothing and makeup and, you know, Kate McKinnon's character kind of very briefly talking about, you know, not wanting to work there and having to hide who she is because she works there. Whereas those are actually very significant, and we don't really get to delve into those too much.
Hmm. I was wondering what the two of you think about the relationship between power and voice in this film, because I think that's a very clear message that does come across. I think that's it's a solid one, but I was wondering what the two of you thought about the way this film presents it.
I kind of go back and forth on that, because my gut reaction to that is that you don't have to have power to have a voice, and that's the most beautiful thing about it, is that anybody can use their voice and speak up and speak their truth. But in reality, you know, being in a place of power sort of, I guess, your voice will be heard louder. And that's maybe the sad thing about it. But then I also think that, I don't know, it's hard to say. I think that there is a relationship, and I'd like to think that anybody could have their voices heard, but I think that people without some form of power, or at least some form of privilege in some capacity, just might not be heard as loudly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely with Jules. I mean, again, it's a huge question. Certainly, everyone has a voice, but within the world we live in, and certainly within the world shown in Bombshell, certain voices are given more power and given more platform and priority over others. And as we see in this film, speaking truth to power in cases of injustice is absolutely critical to moving the needle forward and inciting change. But there are power imbalances, and even speaking truth to power, certain voices are not always prioritized or seen as credible. And, you know, I think that is shown in the film. Maybe something, an extra kind of layer to that we didn't see too much of in the film, is that those who do have power should use their power to raise and amplify voices that are being underrepresented or aren't being given the platform that they should be. And we don't really see too much of that in this film. I mean, certainly you could argue perhaps that's where Gretchen Carlson's voice comes in. You know, she is a fairly respected and established, you know, news anchor, and she is the first one to go very public with it. And so, I mean, off the bat, you could argue that she was seen as a credible kind of source, whereas if, you know, a more junior employee came forward, people might just sort of write them off. And we certainly see that in Margot Robbie's character, who is, you know, feels quite disempowered to come forward. She even turns to her friend, and her friend's kind of like, no, we're not talking about that, you know? Which I thought was quite interesting. And again, another sort of nuance of microaggression and kind of interpersonal relationships in a toxic or abusive culture. But I think that is something that, you know, the film does explore. Maybe they didn't go quite as far as they could have, but that is a really interesting question.
Yeah, I think that you made a good point there about how Gretchen wanted more people to come forward. So Gretchen has a big voice on her own, but I think the more people that would come forward and share their stories, the better. But really, she was banking on Megyn Kelly to come forward, because she thought that would be the biggest voice of that group of people. So definitely the fact that Megyn Kelly was a more public figure, more well-known, she thought that would be sort of the final nail in the coffin.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I felt the film did a good job on was discussing the idea of speaking up, and also the fact that the idea of sort of stealing people's voices, mm-hmm. Or convincing or helping them to think that, causing them to think that they don't have one. You know, and I think they did that really, really well in Kate McKinnon's character, because here's a young woman who's a lesbian who is terrified to lose everything if she just talks about her sexuality or, you know, or anything against the almighty Fox News. And she doesn't agree with it, and she just plays along, but she's not happy about it. And it's one of these things where I sort of sense that the film was pointing out the fact that, you know, everybody's voice matters. In a toxic environment, that voice is kept quiet. Even to the point of that, the key scene, the terrible scene with Roger and I think her name is Kayla, but Margot Robbie's character. Mm-hmm. What does he say? Is he says, you know, I'm discreet, but I also demand loyalty. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, oh, okay. But it's not even one moment. Not that one moment is acceptable. That's not what I'm suggesting. But it's a continued thing of quiet. Like, this is ongoing abuse with her character. Ongoing, and I mean, the first time is bad enough. But ongoing and constantly told to keep her mouth shut and placing shame on her for doing so. Mm-hmm. Stealing her voice. And then ultimately it comes down to Megan's character speaking up, but she's sort of the next heavy hitter, which I thought was interesting because Gretchen is clearly waiting for Megan, like you said, Jules. Gretchen is clearly waiting for Megan because she's the highest profile, and Megan already has that voice, but she's scared to use it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very interesting.
I think that was probably one of the most touching is probably the wrong word. You know, one of the most intriguing and difficult portions of this film was watching Megan's struggle in deciding whether or not she was going to come forward. And I think this is probably one of my favorite parts of the film, when she was in the car with her family. I believe it was raining, not that that matters, but I think that they were in some traffic and there were a bunch of road signs, construction signs. You know, there was a sign that said, stay in lane. Mm-hmm. And also there's the juxtaposition with the hazard signs. And it was very powerful, in my opinion, that, you know, literally all signs were pointing to the safer option. You know what I mean? Just shut up about it. Don't do anything about it. Save your career. Don't make a stink about it. You know what I mean? Stay in your lane. Mm-hmm. And then also she looks back at her daughter. Mm-hmm. Deciding whether to come forward, because this is such a huge decision that's not only going to affect her, not only going to affect the women that work at Fox News, but this is going to affect the next generation of women.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's such a powerful moment. So I thought that was probably one of the most powerful sort of portions of the film, in my opinion.
I agree. That scene really hit home when she looked back at her daughter and just, you know, you can only imagine what's going through her mind in that moment. But certainly, as you said, I think it was unignorable for her to look at her daughter and think, you know, coming forward may have, you know, many, many ramifications, but perhaps some of them could be, you know, making a better environment for, you know, other women, and perhaps her daughter and the next generation as well.
Yeah, I that was one of those scenes I thought was really well edited. It got its point across visually, and I thought it was powerful. You know, one of the things, you know what, as I talked before about the nuances, one of the things I did notice specifically too that Megan does talk about is the idea of jokes. I thought that was interesting because when she in that, I think it's in that scene, when she's talking about Roger, she doesn't get into what he did to her. It might have been in another scene, but they talk about how, you know, there were always these suggestive jokes that were getting thrown around. And this idea of, again, going back to that toxic culture, just, you know, how even those things can steal someone's voice and a piece of their soul.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I appreciated that conversation as well, because that suggested, again, more than than the physical abuse. This is stealing someone's voice and keeping them down, holding them down. You know, Roger talks about power. He talks about loyalty, and he holds all the power. Now, does he though? He doesn't hold all the power in this film because Gretchen takes it. But Megan at one point says he handed her the power to hurt him. But Roger is the one that decides who does what. You know, the power, like his voice is the one that makes all the decisions. And quells the voice of others in doing so.
Yeah, I mean, when I was watching this film, I don't know if either of you remember a documentary that came out, back in the 90s, maybe early 2000s, called Outfoxed. And it was pretty critical expose of Fox News and just the very, very top-down kind of draconian power structures they had, and I would argue continue to have. Certainly it seemed that straight from the top all the way from Rupert Murdoch himself, there was very active communication being sort of pushed down to all employees that basically on air, in terms of news, you know, there were certain stories that they were not able to tell, or they were only able to tell them in a certain way. Otherwise, if they did not follow those instructions, they would lose their job, they would be blacklisted in the industry, and so on and so forth. As well as just kind of human resources in the office type stuff. You know, there were, you know, people had to look a certain way. They hired people who looked a certain way, and people were expected to act and communicate a certain way within the office. And if they didn't follow those instructions, they would, again, just be out of a job. So going into this film, after having seen Outfoxed a number of times, I was quite interested to see how they would depict that. I certainly think they showed it. Again, Steve, I totally agree with you. I think it was kind of handled, I don't want to say surface level, but it is portrayed in a very kind of blanket way. Like, yes, the Murdoch family has a lot of power. Roger Ailes has a lot of power. And then so on and so forth. There certainly is a pecking order that's established. But the film didn't necessarily really deep dive into the nuances and the kind of daily presence that these power structures had and how they manifested. But I certainly, Outfoxed was kind of top of mind when I was watching this film and kind of wondering how they would portray that, because certainly the reputation that Fox has after that documentary came out was that it is very heavy-handed with how they govern their employees, and they're very clear about power, and if you don't sort of follow the order that they've lined out, you are going against the grain and you will get repercussions for that.
Well, one of the things Roger says is that, I think he says something to the effect of, he's discreet, but he is unforgiving. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dang, that's a bold... What a bold line. You know, it's a, yes, I can help you, but don't cross me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that was probably another really disappointing and sobering part of the film, was how the staff realized that they were sort of stuck, because not only, I guess it was sort of like what Kate McKinnon's character was saying, right? Like, you took a job at Fox News, and that's just sort of one corner of the media outlets that the other media outlets don't love. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's going to be hard to get another job somewhere else because you've worked at Fox News. But then also, you know, you feel stuck there, because if you leave, you have nowhere to go. You stay, you have to deal with all this harassment, but it's almost, and with Kate McKinnon's character, she almost just comes to accept it because there's nothing that she can do. You just have to live your life and do your job and get your paycheck. Right. And it's very disheartening.
I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you, but I used to be a journalism student, so...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so they're certainly, just from being in that world, the different kind of major networks have... You hear stories, you know, and they have reputations and things like that. So kind of coming into it with that perception, I was curious to see how that would be portrayed. One thing I think that was kind of a big topic of discussion before this film came out was that, you know, these individuals, or actually many individuals, as we come to learn in the film, were people who were absolutely abused and victimized. And yet people were kind of calling attention to the fact that certainly not everyone, but, you know, Megyn Kelly, perhaps, and Gretchen Carlson, and maybe not them specifically, but a lot of the on-air anchors at Fox News, you know, have previously, shared information or presented information that was very divisive, or the rhetoric that they kind of published on air on behalf of Fox News, you know, could be harmful or certainly at least inflammatory at times. So I think this film was very conscious of the fact that, you know, there's many layers in every situation. You know, these women were affiliated and given a platform by a network that, you know, is extremely inflammatory and divisive, which I think, you know, it would be understandable if people didn't have much empathy for people that work for that kind of network. But we can also have empathy for these people considering the terrible things that they went through. So, I mean, I think that was something that the film was very aware of, and certainly tried to portray the characters in a very empathetic way, considering that there was a lot of conversation about that prior to the film.
Yeah, this is a film that is definitely aware of the damage, not just of, we're not talking about just about the gender difference, just the damage of working at Fox. Mm-hmm. And I mean, whenever you hear Fox News in the news at this point, you know, it's almost always linked to bias. It's very interesting, which, I mean, every news format is biased in other one way or another. It's just the nature of production, but like extreme bias.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this, I did appreciate that about the film, that it was quite aware of that, and tried to speak to, it was sympathetic to the people that felt they had to work there. I think Kate McKinnon's character makes a comment that she's tried to apply at other places, but they won't take her because she's at Fox.
Exactly.
But she's not happy at Fox, you know?
And we even get the sense from Margot Robbie's character. I think she says at one point in the film, you know, her entire family only watches Fox News. And she's like, I didn't want to work at a network. I wanted to work at Fox News. You know, like there absolutely is a reputation, a perception. And I think, even just with that line of dialogue, you get the sense of, oh, you know, this person in reality, you know, may not be the most perhaps nice person or progressive person by any means, considering that they are so, so determined to work at Fox News and work in that capacity. And a lot of people had mentioned prior to the film's release, you know, they said a lot of the on-air anchors of Fox News can be quite harmful in some of the rhetoric that they put out there. So, you know, it would be interesting to see if this film can actually address that while also being empathetic, because, you know, people are complicated and people can do harm, but also be the victims of harm as well. So I thought that was kind of an interesting conversation that came about even before the film was released. It wasn't even something that came out of the film. You know, that was something people were already discussing after the initial teaser trailer was released. But I think the film did try to be conscious of that and be aware of it. As you mentioned, I don't think they went as kind of nuanced as they potentially could have in many, many ways. But I mean, I think they did try to be aware and overall empathetic.
Yeah, I agree.
Were you as appalled as I was, or maybe you had known already, at the end of the film before the credits, when they kind of give a little sort of parting information, and they mentioned that they had given $50 million between the, I think, was it 20 23, I think, forward. Yeah. And then 65 million to Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly. I personally wasn't aware of that. Can't say I was totally surprised, but I was kind of like, wow, okay, all right.
Yeah.
It's pretty disappointing because it's not any sort of reprimanding. It's, you know, here's a bunch of money. Thanks for your time. Do you know what I mean? I know from a legal perspective, it's like a severance. It's a payout. It's a, you know, don't sue us sort of thing. So I get it. But like just thinking on how they got rewarded for their actions almost, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, they didn't really seem like they actually, certainly they portray in the film as Roger Ailes not really feeling repentant at all, or even embarrassed by his actions. And we kind of see he feels a little embarrassed in front of his wife when they're like, no, there's actual like recordings of the things that you've said. But otherwise, like, he's pretty adamant about his right to the money and to the job and also to his own innocence up until that point. So when I saw that little card at the end, I thought, wow, okay. That's what happened.
He never really showed any sort of remorse, did he?
No, not that I remember at all. He seemed
perhaps he did in real life, but
no, he does not have that moment of realization. And everything is justified. Yes, it is.
Because I feel like he showed no remorse. He didn't seem to learn any lesson. He made millions of dollars and then died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, because he dies a year later.
Very, very interesting. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually saw this film with my sister. Like, I was glad that she also, at the end, it really did make her think. Like, she was pretty unfamiliar going into it about the actual case itself and the story. So she, at the end, was, you know, kind of asking questions and seemed pretty interested to learn more and read up about the actual case. So I think, if anything, that for me was kind of gratifying. You know, it was sort of like seeing that flashcard at the end was so disheartening. But then also having, you know, kind of a, albeit brief, conversation with my sister, but a good one that she seemed interested in kind of learning more about it and maybe would open more doors to learn more about, you know, the movement overall and, you know, workers' rights. So that was kind of the upside.
that last screenshot is quite sobering.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. See, again, toxic culture.
Exactly.
It's like, oh. And it's interesting that they don't give him any realization at all, because they try to paint him as so sympathetic throughout the film. There are several times where they paint him as sympathetic, and yet at the end, they don't give him any realization. So he's just like, he's just an idiot. And it's interesting. You talk about voice. I thought this was very telling too. Rogers is not allowed to say goodbye. That's his punishment. They take his voice away.
Love that.
Because that's the thing. He's like, well, I'm going to come to the newsroom with you. And he says, no, you're not. I want to say goodbye. No, you can't.
Yeah, I think that was probably one of the only, like, yes moments.
Yeah.
Like, finally, he gets a little, like, a little jab twist, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And then he handed him a check. And
thanks so much.
Or does he hand him the check first? I think they give him the number before that conversation. But anyway.
Yeah.
What a footnote, or not a footnote, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a bookend to this film, you know, to end it in that way. It, as you said, that's a good word, very sobering. That's the final thing you see before you leave the theater.
Yeah, and I think it just goes to show that there's still a lot of work to be done, because people can get away with these things and then really have no repercussions.
Yeah.
Ladies, this has been a wonderful conversation. I appreciate it. Like I said, I feel like I learn by listening to you speak. But well, thank you. But we really should wrap it up. Let's screen it or skip it. Bombshell, screen it or skip it.
I think you should screen it. I think it's a very important story to take in, whether or not it is the best movie of the year. It's something that needs to be consumed, because I think that it's important to know that these things happen, and they actually happen. This isn't fiction. It's real life. And even if it doesn't happen to this extent, it does happen every day in so many different places. And even if it's just something minor, and even if it is just a joke, it is important to be aware. So I think that you should definitely see it. It is good. It is a good movie.
I'm with Jules. I would say screen it. As she mentioned, it is something that is important to take in. This is based on a true story. This really did happen to these individuals, and in fact, many more. And it actually happens across industries, across locations. It happens all over the world. You know, this, I think, is a film that kind of makes the story very clear and digestible and also accessible, because these are people that a lot of viewers will know and recognize, and that may just kind of help make that connection. And my hope would be that after seeing this film, someone might be kind of more apt to research this, and through research and through learning and listening to, you know, survivors of abuse and, you know, workplace harassment and assault, you know, think about how they can, you know, better support people in their workplace or people in their life that may have also experienced this, or how to also, you know, as you mentioned, Steve, question your own kind of actions and just try to always be learning and doing better for the people around you.
I'm going to say screen it on this one. My feeling, and I was talking to a friend of mine this morning, and she and I were talking, and I said that I feel like with a film like this, it won't be remembered in 10 years, but the movement has changed everything, or has at least started a conversation that hopefully will change everything. And for that reason, people might still be talking about this film in that time, because when they're talking about the movement, they might look at examples of it on film. This is one of those ones that is worth discussing. And for that reason, I think it's worth a screen. I think this is one of those ones that it's not a blast to go see, but you want it. I think by going to see it, you know, it's good. Like there's some great performances and the script is pretty good. I do think the most important aspect of this film is the conversation that it sparks. I think that's bigger than the film in this case.
Yeah.
But in that regard, I think that it's worth a screen it. So thank you, ladies, for wading into these waters with me. I do appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And for you at home, a reminder that you can find us wherever podcasts are available. On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. You can find us on your Alexa device via Stitcher. Or, of course, if you go to the podcast page at screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, conversation questions that you can discuss about the film and the surrounding conversation about it. We will be back next week. We somehow have started a conversation. The next 3 weeks are female-led films, so we're going to be back next week to talk about Hustlers, and after that we're going to talk about Birds of Prey. So, with Margot Robbie. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. And again, ladies, thank you so much. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.